Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
I'm Trevor Anderson. I am a chart manager here at Billboard. And today we're going to hurry up. So we've got a lot of things happening today. We're talking about Drake. We're going to talk about Tori Kelly. We have an interview coming up. Let's go. But first, Gary's got to bore you all with the details of his vacation.
You know how someone goes on vacation, they come back with pictures and they say, hey, can I show you these pictures? What do you say when someone says that? If you're a good friend.
Oh, I just clocked out, and you know, them subways ain't what they used to be, so maybe send me an email later.
Yeah. A better friend would say, oh, well, okay. They'd kind of smile, look at a few pictures. That's kind of what I'm going to do with the listeners now. I can see everyone politely saying, okay, I want to hear about Gary's vacation.
Well, do we have a treat for you, because we're about to talk about it.
I'll go quick. No, I went out to the Southwest, to Utah and Arizona with my brother. We do a lot of these trips where we go to national parks. So we actually did 4 national parks in this one: Arches, Canyonlands, Grand Canyon, and Zion, in about 10 days. So got to spend a lot of time at each one, though. Really got to know each one. Arches was really cool. Delicate Arch, hiking out there. The main arch you see on the Utah license plate. It's really...
Raise your hand if you can visualize the Utah license plate.
I think some of our nature-aware listeners know about that. I'm a big Jurassic Park fan. Are you, Trevor?
I like it. I'm not going to say I'm a big fan. Like, I don't know, you know, the little trivia nuggets and this and that.
You wouldn't go to a dinosaur park if you had the chance?
I mean, I probably would go if I had the chance, yeah.
We did. It was in Utah. This dinosaur museum, and the really cool thing is you go out into this trail, and they have all these life-size dinosaurs. Really realistic looking, and the last one you get to, you see all these, it starts with smaller ones, it gets bigger. It ends, obviously, with Tyrannosaurus Rex. The eyes just staring down, the teeth. It's actually really scary. I know it wasn't real, but I was pretty scared.
Did your brother have to comfort you, escort you out?
No.
Tell you it wasn't real?
No. But, yeah, Moab Giants, if you ever get out there. So we were just kind of playing up Jurassic Park, talking about that. And then we went to Monument Valley in over the border from Utah into Arizona. Amazing, all these desert features that you wouldn't see anywhere else. We took a guided tour out into the desert. There are Native American families living out there, but the thing we kept talking about, it's where a major scene in National Lampoon's Vacation was filmed.
When I was your age, my dad shared a beer with me, and I thought it was about the best thing in the world. Yeah. When I was a boy, just about every summer we'd take a vacation. And you know, in 18 years, we never had fun.
That's probably way before your time, right, Chevy Chase?
You know, it's one of those things that I know the movie, but I've never actually seen it.
Yeah. Probably still my favorite movie of all time. And we saw the exact spot where Chevy Chase is running through the desert, kind of loses his mind out in the heat. So it's kind of cool to say that's exactly where that happened. We actually went a little bit south to a town, Kayenta, Arizona. We saw the gas station from the movie, famous scene where Chevy Chase gets robbed. We saw the exact gas station where that was filmed. You're looking at me like I'm crazy to have put that in a vacation.
No, that's cool, G. That's yeah. I'm I'm just trying to picture a gas station, and yeah.
I researched, found it was the exact station.
I'll have to check the film out, but I do know it's, you know, it's a, like, it's more than a cult classic. I guess it's just like a generational favorite,
right,
of that era. So yeah, before my time, but I probably should knock it out.
More details, or is that enough?
I think we'll have an unabridged version of the podcast, director's cut, special edition, where we're going to get into all of Gary's memories. But I think for now...
Oh, wait, I got one more.
Oh, but we ran out of time on this segment. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, you were camping the whole time, so we're out in nature. Could be kind of dangerous, animals. I did get bit while I was out there.
Ooh, now we're talking. Let's go. What did Gary get bitten by?
You think my other stories were bad?
Don't say like a flea or like a mosquito.
An ant.
An ant.
Didn't even happen outside. It happened inside the car with the window rolled up.
Wow, what a man of the woods, Justin Timberlake.
I was fine out in the woods. It just bring me back inside. That's when it's dangerous, apparently.
I don't know how we're going to follow that segment up, but we're going to try our best as we kind of blaze through the top of the show. Let's give you a proper rundown of what's coming your way this week on the Chartbeat podcast. Drake fans, Usher fans, Chart fans have all been patiently waiting, circling their calendars for this date. We're going to talk about the history-making feats that involve both Drake and Usher this week, as Drake is once again number one on the Billboard Hot 100. So I guess there's a little bit of a spoiler for those who thought it may be somebody else's turn. And we are also going to take a journey to Nashville to talk to our friend Tori Kelly, our Nashville-based senior chart manager. Jim Asker sat down with Tori and spoke about her brand new album, Hiding Place, that is coming out tomorrow, the day after this airs, September 14th. Her first album in 3 years. And for those who are fans of her pop sound, you're going to see a little sonic change. We're going into the gospel lane now for Hiding Place. So we're going to talk about that crossover and some of her crossover hits that have been hitting several genres. That's all coming up.
All right. Right now, this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Let you get a taste. Do you love the taste? Yeah, that's
number
cool,
10.
But he ain't like me. A lot of girls like me, niggas wanna fight me. Nigga, get your ass checked like a fucking Nike. Me, not icy. That's
back in high school, I used to bust it to the dance.
Yeah!
Now I hit the FBO with duffels in my hands.
Number 9.
I didn't have a Zan, 13 hours till I land. Had me out like a light, ay, like a light, ay.
Like my boss, I can flick it like a light switch. Like Vice President Mike Pence, back up on my shit in a sidekick. As
number
I lay
8.
On a spike strip. These are things that I'd rather do than hear you on a mic since 9/10. Your rhyme is about ice and Jesus Christ, man. How many times is someone gonna
fly? I still see your shadows.
Number
in my
7.
Room. Can't take back the love that I gave you. It's to the point why I love and I hate you, and I cannot change you, so I must replace you. Oh, easier said than done.
Payback in a way. I regret it that I did it. I don't want
number
a couple
6.
Grammys, but I sold my soul to get them. Wasn't in it for the trophies, just the fucking recognition. Fuck's the difference. I'm that cracker. Been the law, fuck the rules. Man, I used to risk
say that I am better now, better now.
Number 5.
I only say that cause you're not around, not around. You know I never meant to let you down, let you down. Would've gave you anything, would've gave you everything. Oh,
I don't really want no friends.
Number
4.
He trying to 69 like Tekashi. Call him Papi, worth the ASAP. Keep me rocky, I'm from New York, so I'm cocky.
Beat it up like piñata.
Number 3.
Sometimes close the curtains. Bad bitch make you nervous.
Como Celia Cruz tengo el azúcar.
Like you gotta find you, me, do what I want when I come through. I need
number 2. And number 1.
Say you never ever leave from beside me. Cause I want you and I need you. And I'm down for you always, KB. Do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never.
All right, and in proving that I am not a liar, there you go. Drake, number 1. 9 weeks, is it? In my feelings, still number 1 on the Hot 100 this week, as we kind of mentioned up top. Usher fans, Chart fans, Drake fans, all been paying attention for this. this makes two things that happened with Usher. We'll start with maybe this year specific, and then we'll jump into the all-time feat. So if you've been paying attention this year on this podcast, on these charts, on anywhere music is consumed, you will know that 2018 has been Drake's year. And in particular, with In My Feelings this week hitting 9 weeks at number one, you add that to the 8 weeks that Nice for What had, you add that to the 11 weeks that God's Plan had, that gives Drake 28 weeks at number one in 2018. That ties Usher for the best performance by one artist in any calendar year. Usher, 28 weeks back in 2004, of course, with the incredible album Confessions and the singles Yeah, Burn, Confessions Part 2, and, of course, the duet with Alicia Keys, My Boo, to close out the year. So, of course, as we are not celebrating New Year just yet, there are more weeks in 2018, so Drake could break this record as soon as next week.
Yeah, that's what's one of the interesting things about this. Usher set that record. It was in December of 2004. Here we are in September. There's still, about 3 months left in the year. But we'll see. Scorpion's still going strong. Nonstop has become the new airplay hit from the album. So don't know if that gets to be another number one. Already debuted at number two. So
yeah, I was going to say that's probably the biggest sort of push towards it is that the week the Scorpion came out, it was the biggest non-single.
Right.
So that generally, of course, tends to be a flag for a lot of the companies that, hey, this is the song that people like the most. Do right. something with this.
Yeah, you kind of forget at this point that In My Feelings wasn't number one that first week. It had to jump past that. So off the bat, In My Feelings, as big as it seemed now for over 2 months, wasn't really the first choice from the album. So it's been number one ever since. But yeah, 28 weeks at number one in 2018 for Drake. We're going to talk more about that next week. We're going to actually devote a lot of the podcast next week to is Drake's 2018. Is it the most historic? Is it the most dominant year that anyone's ever had in the history of the Hot 100? Is it bigger than the Beatles in 1964, Michael Jackson 1983? Drake's got the numbers to back him up. We're going to talk if it really feels like that next week.
I assume you're talking about it in a chart sense, not sort of a overall pop culture.
Well, I think that's where we're going to go. I mean, the numbers say he is now tied with Usher for the most dominant year ever. No one else has ever had more weeks than number one. So I think we're going to get into more. Does it really feel like that? And maybe it's a little hard to tell when you're in the moment. Looking back, you can certainly see how some years, there's no real way to, I guess, say this without kind of coming down on Black Eyed Peas a little bit, but you look at their 26 weeks at number one in 2009, and you kind of think, they just had two huge singles that reigned back to back, and they were never able to have that kind of domination after. Whereas you look at something like the Beatles in 64, Michael Jackson in 83, and you just know those are pop culture years that still have so much, probably more impact today.
Yeah, I mean, interesting too that, I mean, for 28 weeks to number one, I mean, Drake, and this is obviously sort of a planned strategy, is really like media absent. You know, not on award shows, not on TV performances, not doing, you know, making the rounds sort of in a way that's oversaturating. So kind of funny that, yeah, I mean, to like as big as this year is, we really haven't sort of seen, quote unquote, a lot of Drake. But yeah, I mean, that's part of the new ecosystem. I mean, really that viral videos and, I mean, he's done an excellent job. I think anybody can agree with his music videos this year from God's Plan giving out, you know, the $1 million from Nice for What having, you know, I mean, that incredible cast of women to really be the stars of the video. I'm upset with the Degrassi reunion. Now In My Feelings had the video challenge. So in an era where a lot of people think video is kind of dead and, you know, it's maybe not quite as important, things like the VMAs and all those kind of enterprises, Drake's proven that, hey, you know, videos still can, you know, done right and done with some clever strategy behind them. I mean, they can still make as big an impact, if not, you know, maybe even for In My Feelings, a bigger impact than the song.
Do we need to do this next week? Or do we just cover it all?
You know, that's going to be a preview. I'm telling you, I have faith that next week, this is just going to be the warm-up act. This is just the level one intro course. Okay. We're going to get the advanced take from Dr. Gary Truss next week. Bring your pens and paper.
There's a chance Drake might actually not be number one next week. The gap is actually closing with the song we heard at number two once again, Maroon 5's Girls Like You featuring Cardi B. So there's a chance
you want to talk about a phantom hit. It just, I mean, it's just
how. You don't think that's a worthy number one?
No!
Really?
I mean, well, I mean, okay, to be fair, I'm not plugged into the radio. So from everything I understand, this song is probably all over the radio.
Oh, yeah, it's been number one on radio songs for a few weeks.
It's just funny to me that it's like one of those songs that, and, you know, this is not like, I mean, Maroon 5 always has some great songs, but it's just funny to me this song seems like, I don't know. I guess in an age where people sort of like talk about songs, it feels like the song is not really discussed. Like, everyone sort of knows In My Feelings. Everybody's, of course, doing the viral challenge and those kind of things. And it feels like even I Like It sort of has the bilingual flair. And it's a song that people are, like, quoting. Right. I mean, you know, of course, you know, yeah, I Like It Like That. You know, Kiki, Do You Love Me? It's just funny that this Maroon 5 song has, and maybe it's, by funny, maybe I also mean impressive that, you know, Maroon 5 has really been able to make their way up there and hold down the fort for so long with a song that feels like it's just sort of universally there, but, you know, and universally agreed upon, but not really sort of acknowledged as like an oh yeah, like that's the song I want to hear.
Yeah, the video has probably given it the most buzz with all the women in the video, so I think that's kind of made it top of mind for however top of mind it is. But it's been the only pop song in the top 10 for a little bit now too, so it's just representing pop at the moment. I think it's one of their catchiest songs. It's really simple, but it's catchy, and you mix in Cardi B, it gives it a little bit more hip-hop cred.
You know, I got to say, and kind of to that point, it's funny because it feels like the Cardi B verse is like not, I don't know, does it mesh well with the song? I don't know. It's like when I heard the song, like I hear it like as a pop song, and then Cardi B comes in all of a sudden, and I'm kind of like.
Well, she wasn't on the album version, so she was definitely added for the single. All right. Well, next week we'll see if it's number one, whether you want it to be or not.
Well, I'll put it this way. If it makes it to number one or just even hangs out at number two, Maroon 5, excellent strategizers. They know Cardi B is hot. They know that verse will, you know, give them some more, give them a whole new fan base and to latch onto. Can't blame them.
Yep.
All right. So we've covered one Usher record. Now let's take on another one.
Another one. Another one. Another one. Another one.
Thank you, DJ Khaled.
Great cameo. Love it. So if you add up the weeks at number one for all six, quick crash course for those who don't remember, this started way back in 2010, featured on Rihanna's What's My Name, jumped to 2016, featured again on Rihanna's Work, spying a pattern there. 2016, his own One Dance with Wizkid and Kyla, and then, of course, the three from this year, God's Playing Nice for What, In My Feelings. Add up all the time those songs spent at number one, you get to a nice 48 weeks, which is one ahead now of Usher's total for his career, which is 47 weeks. And believe it or not, Drake's 48 weeks, you're not going to find another male solo artist with more than that. So Drake officially, after so many years of, you know, not having his own number one, only getting number ones featured with Rihanna, now he's already taken hold of the career weeks at number one for male artists.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because it really doesn't feel like it was that long ago. We were talking about, is Drake ever going to get his first number one as a lead artist? And now, yeah, number one longer than any other male artist. Kind of like, you know, in sports, where people wondering, can LeBron James ever win a championship? And then once you finally do, that whole narrative gets put to rest.
Well, and not only that, I mean, just to knock through so quickly, I mean, that's incredible. Because, of course, yeah, once, oh, can LeBron get a ring? And then he suddenly three-peats, and you're like, oh, when will LeBron not get another ring? Yeah, right. It's like, oh, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so 48 weeks at number one, Usher 47. Still a long way to go for the overall record. Mariah Carey, 79 weeks at number one. So Drake, something to shoot for. He's broken so many records. Kind of nice to know that there's still something else he still could accomplish.
But hey, I mean, you know, when you look back at adding 28 to the total this year, if he adds 28 next year, you know, that's already putting him in the 70s club.
Yeah.
Great. And of course, that's nowhere near a given, but, you know, the power of Drake, you never know.
So Drake, obviously huge in the Hot 100's top 10 this week at number one again. Another longtime rapper has two top 10s, his first two top 10s in almost 5 years. Eminem is back with two new songs in the top 10. Kamikaze, his new surprise album, debuts at number one on the Billboard 200. Kind of interesting to me, Trevor, how his last album, Revival, which wasn't that long ago, just last December, didn't have any top 10s on the Hot 100. Got close with a couple songs. One of them was one of the only people who seems to have admitted really liking Walk on Water featuring Beyonce, because it was really pop. It seemed like, did he go a little pop on the last album with Beyonce and Ed Sheeran? And why do these songs go top 10 from the new album? Is he, was the surprise element of the album suddenly dropping? Is it a little more, am I totally wrong? Is it a little more emo rap? And so I know The Ringer, the lyrics probably really driving it, but something like Lucky You at number 6 feels like it's maybe a little bit more in that Post Malone, Drake kind of a sound that maybe Eminem hasn't done before?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I think a lot of people after Revival sort of wrote off Eminem Left 4 Dead, and you can never count him out. I mean, of course, Kamikaze, great title for a surprise. That's literally what that is. And not only was it a surprise, I mean, it crash landed in a way that I don't know if a lot of people expected, just because, and we saw this earlier with J. Cole in the year two, taking shots at a lot of the new generation. So I think there's always kind of an element of that beef, that drama, you know, let me hear her. Because even if you read about it, or, you know, if you even read the lyrics, it's not the same as sort of like hearing the ammo. And it's like, oh, M is like, I mean, I do think also, yeah, I mean, it's a weird place that he's in, because, and I think we kind of mentioned this on an episode last year, you know, when you're a rapper who's been in the game for so long, and a lot of your source material was about, you know, troubled childhood, and it's a lot about, you know, growing up in the streets and whatnot, and now you're, you know, you've been a millionaire for almost 20 years.
Right.
It's very hard to have that same sort of authenticity. And I think M even really talks about it on the album, is, you know, this sort of weird place about, well, you know, you all, you know, when I tried to be sort of in his feelings, or to lack of a better phrase, and sort of above it all, everybody didn't want that. But now, you know, I'm taking shots, and he's sort of bringing back really the old Eminem. I mean, he's still, you know, lacing people. A lot of people taking offense at some of the languages and some of the slurs that he uses, but that is representative of quote-unquote classic Eminem. People have a problem with that. But I think ultimately people, you know, that's what you grew up with Slim Shady. That's what you liked about him. That's what you liked, that he was not afraid to pull punches and talk about anybody and everybody in any part of your life. And, you know, I guess in a cynical way, you know, as much as we sort of think we're beyond that and why do we have to do that, there's still that part that, you know, a lot of people, especially some of the people who, you know, were around for those first 3-4 albums, they're like, yeah, this is the M I remember, who was fiery, and this is the guy that they want.
Yeah, maybe it's a combo of that and just some of the production where, you know, it can come off sometimes as a little disingenuous if you try to bend towards what current trends are. But I feel like he kind of made it work in places, and it's kind of the best of both. Classic Eminem with a slightly updated sound in places.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the, you know, that's sort of the magic formula that people wanted. I think Jay-Z kind of had that same balance on 444, where it was, you know, he was... The subject matter maybe have been a little different, of course, talking about the, you know, adultery with Beyonce and sort of trying to be a pro-black entrepreneur, but I think he still did it in that way that made people, you know, stop and think and appreciate his craft and his creativity, and it was just produced in such a clean fashion that, you know, that's what you want to kind of marry. I think with Revival, he probably went, to your point, like, yeah, a little too pop, a little too introspective, and maybe tried to be a little too wise, I guess, on it. And I mean, more than, you know, whether or not it was bad in terms of its quality, I think people just read it as false. Like, that's, you know, maybe you're just trying a little too hard. So, and, you know, M acknowledges that Revival was, you know, kind of whack. So, and he's done that before with Relapse. You know, when Recovery came out, he acknowledged that Relapse was kind of this weird thing that he put out. And, you know, I appreciate anybody who's willing to say with their own discography, you know, okay, that was a misstep. Let's forget that. Let's get back on track.
I'm still going to try to find someone else who liked Walk on Water.
You know, you might have to go through the deepest catacombs of the Beehive, because I don't know if they even, you know, were really feeling that song. Yeah, good luck. Report back.
All right. Let's move on to our special guest this week. Really happy to welcome special guest Tori Kelly to the Billboard Sharpie podcast. Her last album, Unbreakable Smile, debuted at number 2 on the Billboard 200. It was back in 2015. Had 3 hits on the pop songs chart. Nobody Love, Should Have Been Us, and Hollow. She's back now after 3 years and a little different direction with a gospel album and some real heavy hitters that she worked on in the gospel genre as well. So she's going to talk all about that and whether it really is a departure, whether it's a side of her that's always been a part of her and her music, just coming out in a different way on this album. So really excited to hear from Tori Kelly. Jim Asker, our Nashville-based senior chart manager, speaking with Tori Kelly here on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
But that's when love says you're mine. Oh, no. I've cried many rivers. I've walked through some pain. I've seen my world crumble, and I've carried the shame. But I know somebody. He calls me his own. I can hear heaven singing out. Oh, you're never.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, everybody. This is Jim Asker on the Billboard Chart Beat podcast. I'm so excited today to have the one and only Tori Kelly.
Hello.
With us. Hi, Tori.
Hi. How's
Congratulations
it going?
On this great album.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about... your hits that people will remember you for, Nobody Love, Should Have Been Us, Hollow, all top 25 hits on the Billboard Pop Songs Radio Airplay chart. Your album, Unbreakable Smile, debuted at number 2 on the Billboard 200 in 2015. I'll Find You with Lecrae, 9 weeks at number 1 on Hot Christian Songs. Did you know that?
I didn't, actually. That's awesome.
It's amazing. And your country song with Chris Lane is rocking the top 10 on the country airplay chart right now. So you're like the queen of collaborations right now.
Awesome.
And I just want to congratulate you on the new album, Hiding Place. It's tremendous. I've been listening to it nonstop for
the past three days.
Produced by Kirk Franklin, due September 14th. And now that the work is over, it's completed, how does it feel?
It feels absolutely amazing. This is something that I've always wanted to do. I grew up listening to gospel music, and I've just always loved it. It's really a big part of how I started singing, too, just listening to gospel singers.
When you were a little kid?
Yeah, I was really young. I was probably, probably like 3, 4.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. Always had music in my house. I mean, I owe that to my parents. They were always playing just really good music.
Your parents were musical people too, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And for anybody who doesn't know, you grew up in California, correct?
I did. Yeah, Southern California.
And you did this record in Texas.
Yeah, most of it was done in Dallas. Yeah, with Kirk out there.
And is it true that he said to you, if we do a gospel record, it has to be in the South?
It is. That is true. Yeah. He got on the phone with me and we were kind of brainstorming different ideas. And he was like, all right, well, you know, do you want to do it in Dallas or LA? And I always lean towards LA just because it's more home.
Is that where you've recorded in the past for the most part?
Yeah, a lot of stuff goes down in LA. So when he said Dallas, I was like, okay, I'm down. But I kind of, you know, I just thought it'd be easier in LA. And he persuaded me to do Dallas. He was like, if you want that Southern, you know, real authentic gospel sound, you gotta come down to the South. I was like, all right, let's do it.
For people who know you from your pop hits, and your country and Christian, how did this project get off the launching pad from the start? How did this all come about?
So I've been writing quite a bit for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And as I was writing my album, I said, you know, I went to my team and I was like, I would love to just have a gospel song at the end of the album. I think that'd be so cool. And I feel like it's just a huge part of who I am. And I would love to do that. And they're like, all right, cool. Let's go to Kirk Franklin. And I was like, wow, okay. Aiming pretty high. Cause he's, you know, he's a legend and a living legend. And so I was all for it. So we got together, went into the studio in Dallas. And as we began writing and recording songs, everyone got so excited about what we were doing, and we were so excited that it kind of turned into this full project and went from being one song potentially to, you know, being this whole thing. And
was Help Us to Love with the Hamiltones, was that the first song?
That was the first song that came out. Yeah.
Okay. I know the first song was that wasn't the first one you recorded together.
No,
then.
It wasn't. Masterpiece actually was the first one. We had a great time just creating the whole thing. It was very organic and it just felt right.
You know, formerly from radio myself, you know, we tend to, and I did a lot of country radio stations and rock, and, you know, we tended to put artists in a box inside our genre. Like, we didn't want our country artists doing Christian mm-hmm. or pop. And now those walls are kind of coming down, aren't they? Do listeners not think of it that way? In your opinion, with iTunes and YouTube and everywhere else that people could stream now?
Yeah, I would hope the walls are coming down from that. I think we're all prone to doing that, though, kind of categorizing different artists just so that we have a point of reference. You know, if I describe what kind of artist I am, you want to kind of be able to put me in a category. But
what would you say?
For me, I mean, well, now doing this.
Hey, Tori, what kind of artist are you?
I love to sing songs about my life, you know, and I do think the common thread for me in all my music is maybe not even a genre, but it's just soul. I think soul, I have to have soul in my music.
Doesn't
even if
all
it's,
great music have to have soul?
But that might be true. Yeah.
If you go back and listen to the Beatles records, or even the early pop records, I mean, they have soul,
totally.
You know, and I've always felt like when people would ask me about music, I'd always say any great song has soul.
That's really good. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I would hope that's what
and you
I'm,
can't create that. Can you?
Yeah. It's gotta come from within. It's gotta be authentic.
And you're going to be hearing from a lot of fans who are hearing faith-based music for the very first time. A lot of faith-based fans who are hearing you for the first time.
Yeah.
What do you want them to take away from your project?
Good question. I would say, you know, I think even if you don't believe necessarily what I believe, and maybe you don't know who God is, or, you know, you don't know what to think of it, or, you know, you're kind of navigating your way through faith, whatever it is, I would hope that people could hear these songs and feel really encouraged and uplifted, and you know, just know that these songs, they're really coming from a hard place. It's not like I'm just, you know, singing, you know, I love God and I have this passion for him, but also, you know, those songs and a lot of what gospel music is about is you're singing from this hard place. You know, Lord, I'm going through this hard time. Like, I'm crying out to you. Where are you? And you're asking, I have a song on the record called Questions. And it's really just asking kind of like the psalmist asked, you know, where are you, God? And I don't feel you right now. And, so I think, you know, just, I'm human just like everyone and go through things. And these songs are really, that's kind of why I, not kind of, that is why I named it Hiding Places, because, you know, it's this place of refuge when I go into these songs where I can kind of just find peace that God offers. And yeah, like I said, I mean, even if you don't believe in God, you know, I hope that people can hear that and experience that and just hopefully be encouraged by these songs.
What about the process of recording in itself? I told you before we started recording, mm-hmm. I felt like the record has this almost cinematic
yeah.
feel to it. Beautiful.
Thank and you. Which, I love that. That's
was that
awesome.
By design? How did you, and did you mean to make this a seamless, cohesive record like it came out?
I mean, I think that's always the goal when you're creating something. You want it to feel like a fluid piece of art. But no, I mean, we were so surprised even at ourselves or just how well we work together. I found out that he had never co-written with anybody before me. And
You know, I read that. I didn't know if it was true. That's unbelievable. Yeah, so
I thought the same thing. I mean, he had some songs, you know, already written that I believed in wholeheartedly. And I just thought these are incredible. And then I was like, hey, we should write together. And so Never Alone is actually the first song.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
That was the first one that you guys wrote together.
And apparently the first one that he's ever co-written with anyone. So that was a huge honor.
He and I actually wrote Despacito together.
Nice.
Well, tell me which songs you guys co-wrote together and which ones he wrote alone for the record.
We co-wrote Sunday and Psalm 42.
Mm-hmm.
It Is Well and Never Alone. Those four. And then the other four, he wrote himself.
The track Never Alone. Tell me about that. The new, the single.
Yeah.
And why that was the obvious choice for the single.
That, so like I said, that was the first one that we wrote together. And I think it's just so uplifting. Like whenever I hear it, I get excited. I get really hyped. And, I think it just has all the different elements that you would want, that I would want, for people to hear as like kind of the first song. It's got, you know, big choirs. It feels good. It's got a hopeful message. And I remember having that title in my phone before we wrote it. And I just kept kind of hearing that theme. Like I'm never alone. I'm never alone. Like even when I feel alone, I'm never alone. God's always with me. So even though it's such a, that can come off as maybe a simple concept, I was like, how do we unpack that? How can we make that, you know, a full song? And that was kind of the fun part about writing it.
I'm
together.
Sure it's going to do great.
Thank you.
And I was talking about the cinematic feel to the record. And then you get to a song like Psalm 42, and it starts out in this stark kind of, well, you explain it.
Yeah. I love
it. It's beautiful, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks. I guess it is kind of cinematic now that you say that. I love that word. Yeah, it's very, it starts very kind of calm and quiet. And I say that there's a line too. There's a quiet place and there's a hiding place. And then it just builds and builds and builds into this kind of this anthem. And that song was just, I think that's one of the ones that Kirk and I were talking. We're super proud of that one. Cause it was a little bit out of his comfort zone, that kind of style. And for me too, I mean, I'd never written about God. I've never written about my faith really. You know, especially on a full project. So that, I mean, that song, it was just cool to kind of come together and, come up with that.
And the writing process itself, how long did it take to make the record about from start to finish, wire to wire?
I think it only took...
He said you kind of showed up at his doorstep with a guitar.
Yeah.
No entourage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. I was just by myself. I want to say 6 months maybe in full. Does that sound right? Yeah.
It's got the feel. Been listening to the album for a few days now, nonstop, because I want to, you know, totally absorb myself in the music. And it's one of those albums you could just put on and do whatever you're doing, but then it kind of stops you because your vocal performances are, you know, just kind of bring you in. And that's something that not all artists have. So, you know, you just made this record that goes from start to finish, and I hope people. We'll do that, you know, just put it on and I think that with a lot of albums in this genre, people could do that where I feel like I'm hoping that the album doesn't go away and you made an album.
Yeah.
Instead of just a collection of songs.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Thank you. Yeah. I hope so too.
Tell us who collaborated with you as far as artists joining you on the project. I know Lecrae is on one, right?
Yes. Lecrae and I, we did I'll Find You together for his album.
Right.
So I was like, you gotta hop on mine now. So, he was just, you know, he's always down, and he did a great job on that song on Masterpiece. And he's also a good friend too. So that was cool. Also, the Hamiltones on Help Us to Love, who are amazing.
And that's Anthony Hamilton's group, right?
Yeah, I believe they went on tour with him and that name kind of stuck.
Oh, okay.
So now they're, you know, doing their own thing too.
And is Jonathan McReynolds, is he on one of the tracks?
Yes. Yes, and I'm tremendous, a huge fan of Jonathan. So we've actually been in contact for a few years trying to collaborate somehow, and it just hasn't worked out until now. And it's so funny because I was telling Kirk, you know, we were both saying, like, this song would be cool as a duet, actually. It originally wasn't meant to be a duet. And we started brainstorming, you know, who would be good artists to have. And I was like, Jonathan McReynolds would be amazing. I'm such a big fan. He was like, oh yeah, sure. Let me just call him really quick. And he busts out his phone, calls him before I can even process what he's doing. He has him on the phone.
Wow.
And he's saying, you want to fly out to Dallas from Chicago to be on the song with Tori Kelly? And it was like, yeah, sure. Click. And it was done. And he was there the next day.
Amazing.
It was so cool. It's like, that's the power of Kirk Franklin. He just snaps his fingers, and, you know, everyone just really respects him. And it's such a cool experience to have Jonathan and I. We recorded it in the same room as well.
How will this work for live shows? Have you thought about that yet? Are you going to take it on the road?
Yeah, I love performing. That's, I think, probably my favorite part about being an artist is getting to.
I was going to ask you, recording live. Do you like both as much?
I like both, but I think it would almost feel incomplete in a way if I just, you know, had the songs out and I didn't get to perform them. Cause that's really just where a lot of my heart is getting to sing. And, that being said, yes, I will definitely, be doing shows.
Like if you're doing a pop show, would you just break out one of the gospel songs and do Never Alone?
Yeah, I might. I think there will be a fun way to kind of weave everything together. Cause at the end of the day, I mean, my other songs that'll be coming out and this gospel project and the songs I have in the past, you know, it's all me still. So even though it's different genres, it all feels like me. So I think when I'm up on stage, I'm excited for that too, to kind of create the show
do that sometimes, like just, call an audible when you're on stage?
An audible. I have done that before, or I'll switch the set list around and just be like, yeah, let's do this one, guys. I'll just yell it to my band.
I love that.
It's fun.
You know, when the guys are just passing around each other, like whispering, you know, we're going to go into this one next.
Yeah, that's the best.
I was going to ask you if you're going to do a completely like gospel tour kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet.
Not sure.
We'll have to see.
Well, yeah. I suggest the Ryman Auditorium here in Nashville.
Ooh,
to do it from start to finish.
That'd be amazing.
Have you performed there?
I have, yeah.
The mother church, you know, of country music.
I love it there.
Perform there?
That was on the last tour that I did, I think. Yeah, like maybe 2016.
Oh, great.
And then I also got to surprise the Little Big Town fans at their show. They called me up on stage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw one of those shows, but I didn't see that one, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So you guys are friends? You and Little Big Town?
Yeah, I love those guys. They're awesome. We always run into each other at award shows or something like that. They're awesome.
You're the kind I want to take a ride with. Sit by on a Friday night in the stadium lights. Side by side, all the ladies like, she's doing just fine. Everybody in the bleachers, they all going to meet.
And it seems like you've been singing and listening to all kinds of music since you were a baby, right? So your music kind of embodies like all these different styles, which I always think a great artist, like their music will embody different styles.
That's good.
While still maintaining some soul.
Thanks.
And I think that you have that, whether, you know, it's by design or not. And I wanted to ask you, you know, you've got this song in the country top 10. You're not afraid, obviously, of being in different genres at the same time.
I love it.
and it's number 8 on, I do the country chart too.
Yeah.
And it's number 8 on that chart as we speak. Hopefully we'll go to number 1.
Yay.
Have you been asked to do more country stuff? Because it's that kind of town.
Yeah. You know, I don't know yet if I'll do... more, I would love to do more country stuff. I don't know if maybe not right now, but yeah, and then in the future, I would love to.
You're managed by Scooter Braun.
Yes.
Who also has Justin Bieber, Usher, other stars. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from all that experience?
Scooter has always been so supportive of me. I've been with him now for almost 6 years, I want to say. And he gets so excited about vocals, and he gets excited about, I think he's always been a champion of just me and my guitar, which has been really cool. When I was, you know, going way back when I was just first thinking about, even partnering with him, one of my things was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I'm this genre. I don't know if I'm this genre. And so I didn't want to necessarily be this kind of, you know, pop thing. Like, I just didn't know yet. And all I knew is I had my guitar and I loved to sing. And I think he's done such a good job of reminding me even that that's really how it started. And that's kind of what I end up going back to. And just that raw, you know, girl and her guitar kind of thing. No extra glitz and glam. And even though sometimes that's fun, it's like, let's, you know, it's good to always kind of go back to where it started. So I think working with him has been really fun because he's able to do that.
I think that you're such an inspiration for young girls. You play, you sing, you write. Is finding, for anybody who's listening who wants to be an artist, is finding a manager like the first thing somebody should do? Or
I would say
what,
no.
What kind of advice do you give?
I think the first thing you got to do is, well, I always encourage people to, especially if you play an instrument, to learn how to write songs. Mm-hmm. And even if you feel like you're not writing good songs, just to try to, you know, put your heart onto paper and just start writing how you feel. And because I think that's just so important as an artist, because it's something no one can take away from you. And you have your voice and you're able to, you know, say what you want to say. So I always encourage people. And if you don't know an instrument, maybe try to learn an instrument.
And you're not even like, you're 25 still, right?
I'm 25. Yeah.
Do you still feel young?
Yeah, I feel young.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, you look young.
Thanks. Age is just a number.
I mean, you're just
anyway,
so
right?
young to have done so much.
It's
amazing. And, you know, I'm sure everyone asks you about the American Idol experience, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I, you know, I actually didn't know what he had said to you until I was prepping for this, thinking about this interview. Did that shatter you at all in the beginning? And we're talking about Simon, of course, and a lot of people know this story, that he said some horrible things.
Yeah,
and you were
crazy.
Only, what,
things
16?
Almost like 10 years ago, almost. It's wild. But
did that shake you to where I don't want to do it anymore? Or did you just like get back on the horse and say, I'll show him?
I think I was sad when I... when I got cut, I was sad for that day. And then I was just fired up right after that. I wasn't sad for too long. Cause I think to me, it was just a sign like, okay, this wasn't the door. Like one door closed doesn't mean that's a bad thing. That just means, you know, another one can open. And, that's really when I discovered songwriting, was when that happened. I started writing songs more. And picked up my guitar, and that's what led to me posting videos on YouTube. So I always say, like, whatever's meant to be will be, and that was just
that's a
good example. It is, yes. And I think that's just an example of, you know, I'll take it for what it was, and it was an amazing experience, and it just led to other things.
Well, I mean, I just think that is just a testament to your strength. Were you plugged into your faith at the time?
Yeah, you know, I grew up always knowing, you know, knowing about God and going to church and hearing about God. And I felt like I had, looking back even at old diaries, it's like I was writing down prayers and things. And
you were at a young age.
Yeah, I kind of mixed in with songs. And yeah, I don't know if it was, I mean, you say that I was strong, but I don't know if it was me. I mean, I really think it all goes back to him, because I think I really leaned into him whenever something like that would happen. Cause I was really bummed, you know, and I went through seasons, you know, maybe the American Idol thing was just one bump in the road, but there were others too, that were just like, okay, you know, when is this going to happen? So, yeah, it was important for me to seek identity in my faith and in Christ, rather than trying to find it in like success and in, you know, all these different things that were happening. Cause that, I think, that's what really, I think, kept me grounded, was, you know,
I think that's great inspiration for young people listening who want to be something and get deterred along the way by someone who says you can't do it.
And yeah.
I've taught a little bit, and I always tell students, like, don't let anybody tell you you can't do something. If you really want to do it, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
The album is called Hiding Place, and you know, I just love the record. I hope you do more of this kind of music down the road. You got such a long career
in
front of you, yet you've done a movie already. Is it have you done more than one movie, or is it Sing?
Just Sing, which was amazing. It was one of the best things I've ever done.
Did you choose the song, the Stevie Wonder song that you did?
You know, I didn't, but I probably would have chosen that if I got the
chance.
Such
a great song. Did you know the song before?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, they did a great job just putting all of that together. It was so much fun.
Was it fun?
So fun. You can't see, but I'm just smiling really big right now because it was so fun.
Did you get to meet the other stars?
I did, but not until the premiere, actually. So we did all our parts separately. And
who did you hang with that you met for the first time that you really liked?
Well, I mean, everyone on the cast was just so cool. And they're all, I mean, mega, mega stars. I mean, it was like Scarlett Johansson, Matthew McConaughey, Reese Witherspoon, so sweet. I've run into her quite a few times. She's awesome. Everyone.
Has anybody asked you about another really movie? Cool.
What's that?
Lately, have you been asked about other movies?
I have, yes, but I can't say.
You don't want to talk about it right now. That's okay.
Yeah.
Next time.
We'll
save it for the next podcast. Well, the single is called Never Alone. I love it. I love the album.
Thank you.
I just want to congratulate you on making this great project.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you like it.
And, you know, play the Ryman.
Yes.
We've been talking with Tori Kelly. It's been such a treat. Good luck to you down the road. I hope to see you again.
Thank you.
And thanks for being here with us. This is Jim Asker on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Thank you, everyone.
On a Monday, I am waiting. Tuesday, I am fading. And by Wednesday, I can't sleep. Then the phone rings, I hear you, and the darkness is a clear view, 'cause you've come to rescue me. Fall with you, I fall so fast, I can hardly catch my breath, I hope it.
All right, that's a song you probably have not heard in quite some time. It's one of those songs you almost kind of maybe forget was as big as it was in the moment, especially if you were like me in the preteen teen years. That was a really big summer anthem going into eighth grade.
That was like twice your age then. You're catching up, so at least that's good.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's about right. But that song, if you don't know it, is called Pieces of Me. That is sung by Ashley Simpson. Yes, younger sister of Jessica Simpson. So the Simpson family, one of the few acts in Hot 100 history where two siblings have had top 10 hits on the Hot 100. Talking about Pieces of Me, because the song hit the top 5 on Hot 100. It's number 5 peak this week back in 2004. Ashley Simpson kind of making some waves back in the cycles again. I mean, really to sort of catch up on a 14-year gap. She is married now. You may have seen her actually on stage last year at the 2017 American Music Awards in November when Diana Ross was getting her Lifetime Achievement Award. Ashley was up there with the rest of the family. Why was Ashley Simpson on stage with Diana Ross and her family? Because Ashley Simpson is married to Evan Ross, who is one of Diana Ross's children. So, yeah, Diana Ross is Ashley Simpson's mother-in-law.
Being a Simpson wasn't famous enough. She had to sort of become a Ross as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, she's a got that Ross. I mean, she's right there with what she's like sister-in-law with Tracy Ellis at this point. And I mean, you can kind of put like this the degrees of separation between Nick Lachey and Diana Ross is down to like 4.
Yeah,
crazy. But Ashley and Evan back in the cycle. They've got a new television show on E called Hey Ashley and Evan. Not Hey Ashley and Evan, but it's just called Ashley and Evan. That chronicles them. They put out a new song, this duets album that they have coming up. So really one of Ashley's first returns to music in a long time.
No place I'd rather be. You're asking me if I love you. I do, I do, I do. You're asking me if I trust you. I do, I do, I do. I know the world could be broken, but it's okay, I got you.
Of course, her earliest fans will know Pieces of Me, her debut single, and she would have been on TV at that same time with the Ashley Simpson Show, kind of running parallel to Newlyweds, Nick and Jessica celebrating their honeymoon and their first couple of years of marriage. Of course, if you know the Ashley Simpson story, you know the big moment, the infamous moment that really put her career on a path that it really never recovered from. Talking the SNL performance in 2004 in October when the backing track for Pieces of Me played when it wasn't supposed to during a second song. She kind of did this little hoedown, you know, little jive, left the stage, came back, tried to sort of explain it away, didn't quite work. And, you know, this is sort of the early days of the internet, but the internet fandoms, criticisms, users, everybody just, I mean, rained booze on her.
Yeah, this was before Twitter, 2 or 3 years before Twitter. And maybe it even wouldn't have been worse then because now things happen, but you sort of forget about it by the next thing comes along. We kind of were stuck with talking about this for quite a while.
Well, that's kind of one of the things that really hit me when I was thinking about sort of the context of all of this, because to me, and maybe I'm wrong with this, but I feel like in today's social media age, particularly in an age where, you know, we've seen sort of rampant efforts against online bullying and sort of targeting, and there's, of course, you know, sort of fans who can mobilize in ways unlike before and really come to an artist's defense. But in a weird way to me, it feels like if this had happened, like, let's say, in this year instead of 2004, I wonder if there almost would be, if it'd be less damaging. Not necessarily because people would move on, but because in a weird way, maybe our capacity for like understanding or, you know, explaining or trying to get back in the cycle so quickly kind of would help explain that away. I think one of the worst things that may have happened is like Ashley sort of had to run and hide for a little bit because of this.
Right.
And so she never really quite got to explain it the way she wanted to or would have. And people were just, you know, they were so eager to, for whatever reason, like just eager to hate her.
Well, now you could interact so much better in a way you couldn't then. So, you know, she could laugh it off. She could respond to you know, comments. Even if they were sort of hateful, maybe she could turn around and be kind of funny with a response on Twitter. Maybe it would diffuse the whole thing.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, people have lip-synced on shows before. They've lip-synced on shows since. And you know, also, I mean, in sort of a related context, this is about maybe about 16 months after the Dixie Chicks have said, you know, their infamous comment about being ashamed, or Natalie Maines, rather, said her infamous comment about being ashamed that the president of the United States, George Bush at the time, was from Texas. And, I mean, of course, that got a huge outcry from the country community in particular. Just, I mean, the quickest blacklisting probably in modern music history. And I wonder, too, because we were all focused so much on the negative about it and there was so much critique and criticism that the defenders and you know, the fans and the positive support had no place to really exist. I mean, where were you going to reach out to Ashley Simpson and tell her, hey, it's okay. You know, we still support you. We right. still, I mean, there's no medium for all of that stuff. So it just, to me, is, you know, it's kind of, of course, it's all about timing in some sense, but really makes you wonder that had this happened, you know, later, maybe in a post social media age, as much as everyone would want to think that it would be exploded and exacerbated and sent around the world that much more and that much quicker, and the damage would have been that much more horrifying to her career, it almost makes me think that maybe not. Maybe the reverse could have been true, that, you know, we would have been a little more endearing, a little more understanding. Ashley could have probably communicated a little bit better and certainly had more positive support around it.
Oh, I know. Family Guy had fun with it.
Will you relax? Plenty of people cheat. Once again, Ashley Simpson.
Oh, no.
So there's at least one meme that happened in a sort of a pre-meme era. Working in radio at the time, I remember we were playing this on our AC station, Pieces of Me. It was a huge hit, and it really fit in sonically with some of the hits, the Michelle Branch, the Avril Lavigne, the Jewel sound that was really big after Lilith Fair. It had that acoustic kind of backing track. It really fit in. So as much as some people kind of wondered how legitimate an artist she was because of the TV side, and then obviously the SNL incident, still a hit song. It was really catchy. And sound-wise, it fit in. You hear it now. Good song to hear after all this time. Sounds like it's, you know, a little bit lost at this point, but you can totally hear why it was a hit.
But we should say that it wasn't as if her career, you know, completely fell off the map. She addressed a lot of the controversy on her next album, I Am Me, which actually debuted at number one on the Billboard 200. So there was still a community of fans, you know, willing to support her and still standing by her. But always, you know, kind of unfortunate, especially that early in somebody's career. I mean, remember, Pieces of Me had probably come out about 6 months before all of this. So the window, really, of her music career before that incident was really small. But always unfortunate when something like this kind of shakes an artist and you really can't shake it off.
Talking about 2004. So we're talking so much about Usher. How was his year? But I guess he had to share the spotlight with Ashley Simpson.
Yeah, some like that. We'll say there's a tie for first between Usher and Ashley Simpson as the biggest musical moment of 2004.
All right. There's our flashback for this week, and that's this week's Billboard Chartby podcast. So thanks again, Tori Kelly. It was great hearing about her new album and Jim Asker interviewing Tori. So again, that's out if you're listening to this here on Thursday as it posts. It's out tomorrow, her new album. So next week, again, more Drake. We're going to talk about Drake in historical terms. Is his 2018 the biggest year anyone's ever had on the Hot 100? So we're going to look at some acts who had huge runs at number one in previous years. Also, some combinations of years, too, because if you just go by January to December, you miss that Mariah Carey had almost 6 months at number one from part of 95 to part of 96. So
we'll be okay without that.
Yeah, I gotta mention Mariah. So we'll talk about all that next week. You're actually going to be off, Trevor, next week?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'll be MIA. Maybe it's a little convenient, depending on how much Mariah is going to come out of Gary's mouth. But don't worry, we've got an all-star lineup of replacements ready to go. And I'm sure, of course, I'll leave the show in Gary's capable hands. And there'll be a lot of discussion to be had, so be sure to tune in for that.
Ooh, I can give more vacation stories next week if you're not going to be here.
Yeah, you just empty the well. I mean, just give all the stories you can while I'm gone. I don't want there to be a single story when I get back. I would hate for you to have to hold on for it for 2 weeks. I know I can already, it's your favorite thing to talk about. It's our favorite thing to hear about. So don't feel bad for me. Don't hold off on anything. Just while, you know, just next week, just let it go.
More dinosaur talk next week.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.